This is Will's Band of the Week for August 29th, 2021. Welcome to another edition of Will's Band of the Week. This is Will, along with Jason from Green Monster Studios on the shores of Lake Monona, Wisconsin.
Hello, hello. That's quite the intro.
Wasn't that pretty good? I kind of rehearsed that. I was doing pre-production as I was running errands in my car, and I said to myself, that's how I'm going to introduce Jason.
Wow, you've been holding on to it all day.
Yep, all day. Green Monster Studios on the shores... How about the shores of lovely Lake Monona?
Yeah, I'm sure at parts of the year it's lovely.
Well,
not so much today.
Yeah, Lake Monona is a pretty cool lake, though, right?
For sure.
I think it's
a quality lake. I just
don't
go jumping in it because of all the green algae.
Yeah, that depends which direction the wind is blowing, right? Because if it's blowing in, you get all the algae. If it's blowing out, the water's actually pretty okay.
Oh, I didn't know that.
I guess overall, it's not the greatest, right?
Sorry, Monona.
Yeah.
I just threw Monona under the bus.
Everybody can look up Lake Monona now on their Google map, and it's pretty good. Well, this week we have an interview coming up, which we already recorded, and so don't you kind of feel like we're above $0 already?
Absolutely. They have no idea how above $0 we already are.
So, we interviewed some indie rockers, and it was cool, fun as usual. I've never been disappointed by one of the interviews that we've done. You know, everybody is, it reaffirms my, my positive vibes about all the artists that we listen to. They just seem like good people and nice people and laid back and...
It's nice to know that there are still some out there in the world.
We've had a couple that we were trying to arrange and they didn't work out. And then I'm always like, does that mean they're not cool? It probably doesn't even, right? They're probably still cool. And they just like the schedule didn't work out or whatever.
Yeah.
So, we'll have that coming up. And I think, I sort of feel like this is a lame music news item, but we probably should mention it because it's pretty topical. The baby from the Nirvana album cover. So everybody knows the iconic Nevermind album cover, right? It's got this baby underwater and he's chasing a dollar bill, I think, right? Swimming toward a dollar bill, whatever that's supposed to mean. Who knows, right? So it's like, I don't know. Nobody really thinks much of that other than that's that album cover, right?
Yeah.
So the kid, so whatever he was, like baby... age less than a year maybe, I guess.
Definitely. Yeah, I think so, yeah.
You know, he now is suing whatever I don't even really know actually who he's suing, but whatever like the legal entity of Nirvana, right? Courtney Love.
He's suing everybody. Suing Courtney Love, he's suing Dave Grohl, he's suing Chris Novoselic, he's suing the photographer.
Oh god.
And
like he was caused harm by being exposed. And then the funny thing is that he was promoting the whole thing like for several years, right? In fact he recreated photos of himself like as a teenager, right? Like under the water.
They've done it on anniversaries, I think, for Nevermind's release.
So he's probably made a bunch of money off it, right? Probably a substantial amount of money. And I don't know. Maybe he hasn't. I have no idea, really. But I don't know. It's just...
I know that his parents got paid like $200 or something at first.
Right.
And it's... I mean, you know, nobody had the foresight, I guess, in 1991 that Nirvana was going to be this big thing based on what their first record had done, which was hardly anything. And
right.
But I started reading the article. I saw this pop up and... you know, there was like mention of child pornography, and I sort of started to feel guilty for the guy until I got down to paragraph two, where they start to mention where he had recreated the album several times, and it's just, yeah. And he has Nevermind tattooed across his chest, and there were several links to interviews on YouTube where he thought it was really cool that he had been the Nirvana baby or whatever.
Yeah.
So it seems sort of like a cash grab to me.
Yeah, that's an understatement. Yeah. You know, on one hand, our culture, you know, it's sort of acknowledged that if you get lucky and you're involved in something that becomes famous, then you're going to get a lot of money. But there's no reason that, and that's just a luck thing, right? And there's no reason that he would deserve more than $200. They said, here, $200. They'll just take a photo of a different baby if it's not him, right? So it's not like,
yeah,
you know what I mean? So.
And I mean, if he truly has these sort of, you know, deep psychological trauma with this, I mean, he should definitely reach out to a therapist. And if he's going to sue someone, he should talk to his parents who arranged this whole thing, you know? It's like.
Exactly. Yeah. His parents did it to him. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, it's kind of ridiculous. So I guess to counterbalance, we should give the positive Dave Grohl news, right? Did you see that video of the little girl from Ipswich?
Oh, yeah.
Is it Nandy? Is it Mandy or Nandy?
I think it starts with an N.
So it's Nandy Bushell, I think. And she's from Ipswich. She's 11 years old. And, you know, about a year ago or even more, when she was 10, she was doing these videos with Dave Grohl where she would, like, do drum covers of Nirvana songs and stuff. And it was really cute, you know. So what happened this week is they invited her on stage. She played a song, like, arena rock style. It was pretty cool, right? I think
it was super adorable because they wheeled out a kind of tiny drum set for her, you know, in front of the gigantic amps and the regular sized Foo Fighter drum set.
I didn't even see that. I was just I thought she was just playing their drummer's drum set, but it makes sense. She'd need to play her own.
Yeah. It was so cool.
Yeah. So yeah, there's something about just the pure joy of her performance. And of course, the talent is crazy. I saw there's a video of her playing guitar, too. So she's a really good guitar player, too.
Yeah, I've seen bass, several videos where she kind of loops things and does everything by herself. And I'm like, man, I wish I was that talented.
Right. Yeah. When you're that talented and you're 11, like, where do you go from there? I mean, think about it. When she's 18, she'll have 7 more years of experience. On top of being already so talented, what do you do? Do you become a classical musician, or do you just, or you could just get hired by any band in the world to play arena rock shows? I don't know.
I don't know either.
So, yeah, our correspondent
check in 7 years.
Our correspondent David said he's finally been won over by now. Now he's pro Dave Grohl because this put him over the top. Yeah, I mean, as self-promoting as he is, I think he seems like he's actually a decent guy, you know.
Yeah, I always enjoy listening to interviews with him because he always is very enthusiastic about whatever he's doing. I may not enjoy every song he puts out, but
all right, before we get to the interview, one more thing here. I think we got to do this,
and now it's time for the death of the week.
All right, before we get, you know, the shocked and appalled emails and, you know, everybody gets mad, Charlie Watts gets the jingle, and he gets the jingle in the most positive, respectful way. All right.
Total tribute.
When you're 80 and you were the Rolling Stones drummer, you know, you should get the jingle, and in fact, it would be a disservice to not give him the jingle, I think.
I agree.
So, you know, I don't know where you stand on the Rolling Stones. Like, I've never been the biggest Rolling Stones fan, but, you know, I recognize them, and and they're iconic, obviously. And Charlie Watts I've always thought of him as kind of a classic drummer. And one thing that's great about Charlie Watts is that he's just understated and not doesn't yeah. try to be a excessive showman. You know, he doesn't. Would they wouldn't have like a heavy metal show, right? In the middle, you stop, and there's like a 5-minute drum solo. The drummer goes nuts. I bet you they didn't do that at all, right? I don't think he would even do that.
I would assume not.
Yeah,
but yeah. People can email in if there's a drum solo that we missed throughout the 80 years. But
right,
yeah. He's like kind of was always sort of the opposite of like Keith Moon or John Bonham. You know,
right?
Like he kind of served the song. Rather than twirling drumsticks and being bombastic and whatnot.
And I think Ringo Starr is in that same category. Like, they're not trying to dominate. They're just, like you said, serve the song.
Yeah.
And a couple of things about his style. For one thing, he always played the snare drum kind of underhanded, you know? You know what I mean? Like, the way he would hold it. Yeah. And it's like a jazz drummer would play. It's
sure.
probably easier to do rolls and stuff that way. But then the other thing, there's a super distinctive thing, and this is like a geeky thing, but if you watch him play, he lets up on the hi-hat every time he hits the snare. And it's like a completely, like most people do not do that. And I was looking into it a little bit this week, because that's one thing I noticed like 40 years ago about his drumming. And there was this interview, and this other drummer was talking about this and asked him about it and why he did it. He said, I never really noticed. I just, it's just like, to him, it was just natural, you know, but then everybody sort of overanalyzed it, like, well, he's letting up on the hi-hat, so it's a pure, the snare drum doesn't get, you know, the sound is pure because there's no hi-hat on top of the snare. Anyway, just watch him play sometime. It's cool. It gives him this
yeah,
his own
I need to
little.
Do a, I need to do a deep dive now.
Yeah, he does this. It's a really distinctive thing. Like, there should be drummers all over the world now on their at their next live show as a tribute to Charlie Watts. They got to play that way. Let up. And I was watching a video of him, and even when he was hitting the ride cymbal, and he's like pounding on the ride cymbal, but he's letting up on it every time he hits the snare. It's
wow.
I you know. If you're not a drummer and you know, and you haven't really paid attention to this is probably like really boring for you to hear, but I think it's a cool thing. So Charlie Watts was really cool, great drummer. Sorry to see him gone, but what a great rock and roll career.
For sure. Yeah. Did you have a song that you wanted to play in tribute to the man, or
I really don't. You know, you could play any Rolling Stone song, and then again.
Because, okay.
I don't think so. There was a couple of tracks where people had taken, they had isolated the drum track, and that was kind of fun to listen to that, but it's not worth playing because it's just like, they're just going to hear some drums, you know?
Yeah.
So I don't really have anything to highlight unless you do.
Gotcha. No, I didn't do enough research beforehand. I'm sorry. I'm disappointing the listeners and fans.
All right. Charlie Watts speaks for himself, though. So, there you go. Well, we did an interview with Flower Town. I think we should play that next, right?
That sounds great.
Take it away, us. All right. We're here with Karina and Mike from Flower Town. This is great.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you. Nice to meet you both.
So, Jason has gotten me, I think, you know, this year, a lot, to a greater extent, totally gotten me into a bunch of these bands from Paisley Shirt Records. You guys are right up that Paisley Shirt Alley. And it's great. It's been really fun getting to know. Actually, didn't we talk about their album a year ago?
I think we've pretty much covered the extent of the Flower Town discography so far.
Yeah.
I think we might have talked at least about one of their EPs, and I put both of their EPs on my top 10. I kind of have a bone to pick with all of San Francisco right now with between Paisley Shirt, your three, maybe four, five ongoing groups. Glenn Donaldson, I think my top 10 is sort of just already taken shape this year. And yeah. I don't have anybody, like any room for anybody outside of California right now.
It's going to be all San Francisco top 10?
It might be.
Well, we definitely appreciate both of your support.
Yeah.
It means a lot.
On behalf of the Bay Area, we can say thank you for looking our way.
You're speaking on behalf of the entire Bay Area right now.
Yeah,
for this.
I have been appointed as spokesperson for the entire Bay Area. I have not, no.
Somehow we have gravitated toward the Bay Area, even though we're just a humble Midwestern podcast. But I think it's a combination of we've gotten into the music a lot, and people have been willing to talk to us, which is really cool. So we talked to Glenn Donaldson about a year ago. We talked to Jem from his project called Vacant Gardens. Mm-hmm. And there's somebody else we talked to from the Bay Area, I think, Jason. No, I can't remember.
I don't think I was a part of that. This is my first interview session, so I was definitely not a part of it. So I'm off the hook for remembering.
All right, yeah. You're totally off the hook.
Although I'm always listening to every episode, don't worry.
What episode number was that you're referring to? The one you can't remember.
Episode. We don't keep track of episode numbers, but we have like over 500 because we just can't be stopped.
Wow,
so
that's a lot.
Yeah, if you add up the total downloads, it's a lot. But if you go per episode, we're pretty small. We're pretty small and humble.
As are we.
But Flower Town, you've got a new album, so we want to plug it as much as possible. Maybe play some tracks. Maybe talk about how you created it. All that fun stuff. So.
Sure.
The new album is Time Trials, and before we poison the listeners by telling them what it sounds like, we like to start by playing something, you know, as an introduction. So what would you guys recommend as an opening cut to play?
Well, I mean, the title track is the title track for a reason, so if you feel like something a little title tracky.
Yeah.
Otherwise, what would be a good next
up? Yeah, the title track, I think, might be a good one but for, like, a more upbeat one, but for something a little more sparse, maybe The Way Back.
All right, why don't we start with the title track? I think that's a great introduction, and it's a great title track, and it's track one, Time Trials. Flower Town with the title track, Time Trials.
So was there any temptation to come into this? This is like the first full-length album, and you've put out these two sort of lo-fi EPs to just go full hi-fi and get in there and really gloss it up at all?
I think we briefly talked about having somebody else record us, but I think maybe just the two of us being the control freaks that we are, find it easier to just shape things on our own than to have to enter an endless email chain with somebody about all the changes we want made.
It's also just really fun. I mean, the process of making it together is like a really different process than going into a studio and recording. And I don't know, I think a lot of the fun is in the recording and the mixing that we do together. I mean, writing's fun too, but I think like making it ourselves from start to finish, almost, we don't master anything, but I don't know, it's part of the fun of the project for me at least.
Yeah, can I geek out a little bit on what you're recording with, what you're using to record? Because I'm a bit of a four-track nerd, as everybody knows.
We're using...
Oh, we get to see it.
There we go. I love
so
it.
For those at home that can't see it, it's the Tascam PortaStudio 424 Mark II, which I happen to have right over here on my desk as well. So we're... We're in the same ballpark here.
Yeah. In good company.
Yeah. I think, well, we're usually, and then Karina also has the 414 Tascam. And then when we run out of tracks or feel like we need to sugarcoat things, we usually put it into Pro Tools and go from there, you know, but usually starting on tape.
Yeah. So, and this is even more nerdy, but, do you bounce like each individual track out of the four track, or do you mix it down to one or two tracks from the tape into digital and then add stuff? Or does that make sense?
Tracks separately.
Okay.
Yeah, and then I mean, like Mike said, sometimes we add things directly into Pro Tools. You know, just set up through the four track. But yeah, we just bounce each track, and then we have a bit more flexibility with.
Yeah. Spices. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah,
I think but you know, going back to the question of you know, whether we were tempted to go hi-fi with things, I think, well, sort of related, but I think you could probably relate, Jason, that you know, like when you record things on your own, you have a little more freedom to experiment with sounds and dialing things in because you're not on somebody else's time and you're not running out of money the longer you spend.
Right. I'm sure the pressure to perform in a studio setting, I don't understand how anyone does it and gets good results, but some people are able to do it. Well, it sounds fantastic. I'm excited to know a little bit of behind the scenes, behind the magic of it.
Yep. I actually can add to the Tascam discussion. I had a Tascam 244 that I recorded an album in 1985 on. And it broke down, and the drive mechanism didn't work, and I hadn't really been using it. So I offered it to Jason. He said he didn't know how to fix it. So
yeah, if I were technical, yeah. I would have. I regret not taking it. I wish I find somebody that could fix it.
So here's what I wonder though: like in between using a four track, going into a studio. There's a huge ground in between there. Are you ever tempted to, you know, the sound would be totally different, but you can get those 8-track digital machines for really cheap, right? Or even a 16-track digital. Do you think, is it because of the sound that it just wouldn't have? Is it the character of the sound that you get out of the cassette machine? Is that what keeps you recording on that particular equipment?
Maybe also affordability of like... you know, cassettes are relatively cheap and you can record over them until the thing breaks or the tape breaks or something. But,
yeah.
But I think, you know, Cindy, with Karina's other project, Cindy, maybe you could talk about like how you're recording not on cassette, you know.
We record on the tape, but in a studio, so.
Yeah.
I mean, we have somebody who is wonderfully... affordable, so we have some of the flexibility in my other projects. But I mean, to your point, I think we could have a digital recorder, and it wouldn't cost any more money. But I think there is something about the sound of the tape that we like, and it's also just there's something about just using what you have, you know, what's already there. That's fun too. I mean, there's a lot of kind of random problem solving things that we do that probably wouldn't have thought of ahead of time, but in the moment, like making sounds by knocking on plastic lids of things, you know, just sort of ad hoc what you have around. It's part of the fun, mm-hmm. I think. Yeah.
And then, but if you're going to do that, you're still so limited by the number of tracks, right? So you have to kind of make it count, right? It's a big investment in that banging sound that you're making, right? Because you don't have a lot of spare tracks.
It's true. It's true.
Yeah. Well, I love the sound of it. It's a great lo-fi sound. So, well, Mike mentioned The Way Back, so why don't we play that one, track 3.
Okay.
Flower Town, and the album is Time Trials.
So can we have some insight into how, like, the vocals, even for that song right there, how you guys kind of trade off, how that comes about, how you guys write? And yeah, sorry, that was not a very well worded question.
I got it. Often, but not always, Mike will send me a chord progression, or I'll send him a chord progression, and then the person who has the chord progression starts writing a song, maybe changing it totally, maybe sticking to it, and then, you know, maybe send a verse and a chorus, and then the other person writes a verse and a chorus, you know, so it's kind of, it often just builds that way. So sometimes we'll sing the verses we wrote. Sometimes not, though, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's often the approach, is sing the verse you wrote, but sometimes, for whatever reason, we switch them up, or I can't figure out the rationale.
There are some songs where the lyrics are written by just one of us.
Yeah, that's true.
And I think, so there are weird demo versions that sound like the opposite of what the final thing ended up being.
Sure.
I think it just comes down to maybe the mood we're in, the day that we're recording things, and how we think this, what the song needs.
Yeah.
We have talked many times on this podcast about how we're fans of the trade-off vocals with two people. And especially when it's male and female, for some reason there's a contrast that just sounds great. And so you guys do that, and you do the, you know, kind of the harmonies too, and it's great. It's a good combination.
Does it depend on, I guess, maybe what month you're writing songs? Like, how, because you both have Cindy, as Karina has her Cindy project, and Mike has Tony J. Like, if you're, you know, writing a song, how do you decide, well, this will be Flower Town or this will be Cindy?
Well, for me, it's pretty evident from the beginning. Like, some songs, the difference for me is pretty pronounced. Like, some songs are really clearly Cindy songs and are really clearly Flower Town songs. And also, I mean, if Mike sends me something to start off with, then I know it's going to be a Flower Town song.
Yeah, yeah.
But I've generated songs that, you know, just for whatever reason, I think for me, Cindy songs tend to come from things that I think about and experiences I've had more in the past, whereas Flower Town is more impressionistic. It's like what I saw this morning. so that's, maybe that's part of the difference for me. I don't know how Mike feels.
I don't know. I think it just depends on the day. Sometimes I can sit down and like in an hour, just like end up with the recording of something totally complete. And usually that'll end up being something for Tony J.
Sure.
Sometimes that, you know, I go through windows of time where I just, you know, I'm questioning everything and don't really have confidence in anything. And so sometimes I'll send things to Karina just to see if she can do anything, make something out of the garbage that I'm sending her away. But in terms of like how I decide, like, I think, yeah, it just depends on the day. Sometimes it's obvious and other times it's just random. I don't know.
Cool. No, that's cool. Yeah.
Well, we like to pick, kind of like trade off picking some of our favorite tracks. And I don't want to steal a pick from Jason. I'm sure you've got one or more favorites here. So why don't you pick one, Jason?
I get to pick one? Okay. I have at the top of my list, which hasn't been picked yet, The Door, The Thief, The Light.
Flower Town. Yep, that's another one. A really good one. The whole album is good. I love it. And I have a question. How do you record the drums?
Usually... I think my favorite microphone right now is a Samson R11. I bought one microphone once in my life, and then the rest somehow just found their way into my life, on the street or at garage sales or things. But usually just a dynamic microphone, just kind of hovering somewhere between the, I don't play a full drum kit, ever. I've gotten lazy with, setting things up. And so usually I just have a floor tom, a snare, and then a cymbal. There needs to be some sort of accent or like a shaker or whatever, but usually just dynamic mic somewhere in the middle over everything, and just, try out a position, do a test recording, see how it goes. And if it sounds okay, then just do the whole song. Maybe sometimes put the microphone through a reverb pedal or something, but nothing fancy. Just get lucky sometimes, I guess.
Yeah, I just love how it's the drums sound both. They're almost kind of buried in the mix, but it also sounds great. I don't know, just the way it all mixes together. It's something about that whole lo-fi thing. I think it sounds great.
Thank you.
The Tascam glue, I think, is part of the magic.
Super glue.
Yeah, for sure.
When I did my recording in 1985, it didn't sound that cool for some reason. It must have been the lack of talent.
Oh.
No, I didn't. It was, at the time, I was using a drum machine, and it was like a techno kind of, I don't know, a lot of synths and stuff. And I don't know. It's cool. It still has a Tascam sound, so I'm you know, happy with it.
Awesome. Drum machines are cool.
What was your project called?
It was called Dolphins in Disguise.
Ooh.
And yeah, you can find it on Bandcamp if you care to look.
Yeah, I think you can find it on Bandcamp, right?
Yeah. Yep. It sounds very 80s. You listen to it now, you're like, oh, these are guys screwing around in 1985. It's like... But also I wanted to ask you, you have all these projects, you could do a live show with multiple bands and just sort of open up for each other. I'm just wondering, what do you play live, and if so, what is your lineup? How do you do it?
Yeah, we just actually played yesterday, an outdoor show with a generator, which was super fun. And we're lucky to be able to enlist friends to play with us live. So Kevin, who runs Paisley Shirt Records, was kind enough to learn the songs on bass. So he's been playing bass for us. And then a friend had a couple different drummers sit in for live performances, but a friend who also drums in a band called Sea Blight and his own project called Chime School, he sat in with us yesterday. So yeah, I mean, I think it's part of the great, huge asset of having this community here that you can ask your friends if they will do this, and they say yes. You know, and they volunteer their time and energy and yeah, just to play music.
That's great. I've always found it fun for a lo-fi band to, when you hear them live, because the dynamics are so different than the four track, and it's just so fun.
Yeah.
Like my example is when I you know, one of the classic lo-fi bands is Guided by Voices. And I remember hearing Gold Star for Robot Boy, you know, this classic lo-fi track. And then hearing it live, and it just like, it's kind of cool how it just comes to life, like in a different, in a different dimension. You know, it's like, they're both great. The live sound and the lo-fi.
Yeah.
And yeah, I love
it. It's like throwing the little capsule into the bathtub and it turns into the dinosaur.
Right. Yeah, it kind of explodes, you know, just because of the dynamics. It's not being held in by that Tascam anymore.
Would there be any chance to capture like a live band or like, you know, a group? I mean, you could probably do it with the Tascam still, but to record someday as like a four piece or something instead of just the two of you?
That could be fun.
Maybe. But yeah. Yeah, we haven't talked about that before.
Okay. Yeah. There's no pressure. There's no pressure for me. I'm enjoying the two of you. But I do, I love that, I don't know, I love how small the internet feels sometimes, that, you know, that people post videos and stuff and that I can kind of watch you guys all play out there in California.
Yeah.
And yeah, each band sounds really just so great as a live band. So it would be fun to also capture that maybe someday down the road.
That's a good idea. Yeah. We actually saw Kevin earlier today, and we were saying that we feel like we kind of know you, Jason, a little bit just from Instagram. I'm like,
yeah.
Well, I know his cats, and I know his kids. So,
yeah.
So, yeah. Yep.
But. Yeah. Instagram is definitely like connected. You know, it's how Kevin and I think met a couple years ago, and we've been good buds since. So that's cool.
You have an album coming out on Paisley in the not so distant future, I hear.
Yeah, I don't know if that's been divulged, but this might be some news for the Will's Band audience. Yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
Sometime this fall. It's in production right now. It's all done. We're just finishing it up.
Exciting.
Oh, that is great.
Yeah, I'm super excited about it.
Well, if you ever feel like coming out to California, I'm sure we can set something up, play a show together.
Nice. Let's get this global pandemic out of the way. I was going to ask just like how shows have been, like, because I know you've been out a little bit to see some stuff, but how has it been playing shows in this sort of Delta variant world?
I mean, I feel like we are in a pretty lucky place again, because San Francisco is doing all right relatively, and the places that Mike and I go to, like, see shows or play shows, you know, are quite responsible and enforce, you know, masks and enforce vaccination proof. But still, it's a little freaky, of course,
sure,
to be back in that setting. I think, like, once you're on stage playing, it's everything else kind of gets forgotten, you know. But playing outdoors is also really nice. These generator shows we've been doing, had several of them. I don't know. It's a really fun addition to playing in venues, and it feels, you know, safe for people who don't want the venue, you know.
Yeah, the more you can do outdoor, the better.
Sure.
We don't have here in our local music scene, we just don't have very many opportunities for people to play outdoors. So what they've done is they've booked a lot of shows starting in September. Most of them are still on, or you know, for the time being. And we're, you know, we have a pretty good vaccination rate here and everything, but it's not, it's still not that great. We still have a pretty high rate of infection right now. But the interesting thing is they just passed a countywide rule for masking for indoors, and they have not made an exception for the performers at the venues. So there's this big deal now where it's like, you really expect there to be live shows indoors, and all the performers have to also be wearing masks. So they're working on that, trying to get that part of it changed.
It's like, that was just a total typo or something. How does somebody playing a clarinet or a flute?
That'd be like a problem.
Throw in the mask.
Yeah. Well, anyway, I'm glad you're able to play some shows, and hopefully we're on a good trend where it's not going to get any worse, and as long as more and more people get vaccinated, we'll be heading in a good direction, I hope.
I hope so.
Yeah, absolutely.
I know that we are lucky right now to be able to play shows, whether it's outdoors or inside, but, you know, hopefully it moves back towards something that feels better and safer and more closer to what normal used to be.
Yep. Well, the album is great. It's called Time Trials. The band is Flower Town. Do you guys have anything else you want to say on the you've got this this huge audience of millions? Well, you know, theoretically, I mean, millions could listen if they wanted to, right?
The only thing that occurred to me to say that I forgot to say when it was asked about was, you know, we didn't know this was going to be an album on vinyl at all. We set about making more EPs on tape. So, you know, it was a surprise that it was that Kevin decided to put it out on vinyl. So the kind of casualness of it, I don't know if it would have changed if we knew it was going to be an actual LP, but we were just going about our little Flower Town business of making little tape EPs, you know, home duplicated with stickers on them. So that was our plan. And I mean, know.
I mean, just what an amazing thing to be like the first vinyl release on the Paisley Shirt label. It's pretty, it's so huge.
Yeah, super, super honored.
Very honored.
Yeah.
It's a O-U-R, honored.
And the next one, the Hits, has an LP coming out on Paisley, and it's so good. It's such a great record.
Yeah, I can't wait to hear the entire thing. We were my household, my kids were big fans of their first release last year. All the years are fading together. I think it was early 2020, but I did want to give kudos on, I think the song title of the year is to you guys for Nicolas Cage, Defies All Age. I just had to throw that out there. It's a lovely little instrumental track. We didn't get to play it, but I saw that because Kevin actually sent me some photos of the record when you guys were piecing it together, and I saw that song title on the back, and I sort of flipped out. And in our little chat on Instagram, like, that's the best song title. I don't care what the song is, whatever it is, it's going to be good.
It used to have words, but it doesn't anymore.
There were actually lyrics about Nicolas Cage that I got ditched.
You just kept the title.
I hope
you kept
that
the title
on the 20th year like deluxe reissue.
Right.
Make sure you guys put that somewhere. Save it.
I tried to delete all traces of it, but Mike may have sneakily kept it. I don't know.
Maybe. Somewhere in there. Somewhere in the files. In the vault.
All right. Well, thanks again. We'll keep watching for future releases, and we will if you ever venture outside of San Francisco, play some shows, we'll be looking up for those too.
Thank you. Wisconsin's beautiful. I've been there once and it was breathtaking, so maybe someday make it back.
So depends on the time of year and where you are in the state, but it has its merits.
Okay.
You might not want to be here in January when it's below zero, but
good point.
But there was a heat. The heat index today was like 100. So
I did not move to Wisconsin for this weather. I'm deeply disappointed. I'm I'm ready for fall.
Yeah.
Yeah. Absolutely.
That's why we keep our basements cool and damp, though, so we can hang out down here.
Excellent. It's a good basement.
Yeah, I like your basement. It looks like that's your music space down there.
Yeah, he's got a classic. Yeah. That is just, it's great. Yep. Well,
thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, thank you. It's been
Thanks, guys, for chatting. It was nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you, too. Yeah, Will, Jason.
Thanks for coming on. Stay in touch. We'll talk to you again soon, hopefully.
All right. Take care.
All right. Bye.
Bye, guys.
Bye.
All right. That was Flower Town. And pretty fun, right?
I thoroughly enjoyed myself. It was good.
Apparently, in a few months, we can say label mates Flower Town. Is that cool or what?
I guess, yeah. I guess the beans got spilled.
We'll just leave it at that. We'll just stop talking now because we don't want to get into trouble, right?
Yeah, hopefully I don't get dropped.
It could be. There's probably... Didn't you read the 27-page single-spaced contract that you had to sign? That in, like, at page 16, three quarters of the way down, it says, if you divulge anything, you're dropped immediately.
Yeah, it's what happens when you work with Disney and Marvel Studios. You forget these things, and
then you're in trouble. Actually this is on Capitol Records, right? A division of Capitol Records. Oh, that's awesome. So that was really fun.
Thanks so much to Mike and Karina for joining us on a Saturday evening.
Yep. Well, I've got one more. We have a California theme. It's funny because we were talking to them about how we're getting into all these bands from the Bay Area and how San Francisco is taking over, especially in your top 10 list. Apparently, there's no more room for anything else.
So. I know. Well, I was even going to say the old joke about moving to Brooklyn or Australia for indie rock stardom, and now it's just go straight to San Francisco or Oakland and you're all set.
Yeah, you know, every time, though, I think about that, not that I'm going to move there, but when I think about these indie bands in San Francisco, I think, the cost of living there is insane, right? Maybe Oakland you can actually do. The last time I was in San Francisco a few years ago, somebody was telling me a story about how the young people who get jobs there, they will share an apartment with like six other people, and it's like $5,000 a month, you know? And then so they just get a whole bunch of people and they share it. So maybe that's how you do it. You just got to live with a group or something. But that's just, it's the market out there is nuts. There's too many people making too much money on computers, right?
Right. Yeah.
But they've figured out a way to have a great indie rock scene, and that's really cool. So the next one is The Umbrellas. And this, I don't really know a lot about them other than they're from San Francisco and they have this retro sound that kind of fits a little more poppy, a little bit less lo-fi, but it still fits, I think, in the whole, you know,
kind of reminds me of a band that we talked about not too long ago, The Telephone Numbers.
Right.
Something that I was thinking, which is another Paisley shirt, another California band.
Yeah.
I didn't know much about them either. And I know that they had kind of released an EP and then they got picked up by Slumberland Records for this first album, right? This is their first album, right?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is pretty incredible, like to release on Slumberland right off the bat. That's pretty amazing.
That's I always say this. There are all these labels, and if I hear the name of the label, I say to myself, that's total indie rock cred. But I can't tell you any other bands that are on Slumberland Records. But if I looked at it, I'd be like, oh, yeah, there's probably 10 of them. So maybe we should do that. While we play the first track, we're going to see who else is on Slumberland Records.
Okay.
I'll pick a track.
Yeah, you go. I don't think you got to pick a Flower Town. So,
by the way, my pick on that I didn't get to make on the Flower Town album is Dim Nick. That's a great one, number four.
So I had that on my list as well.
Yeah, everybody go back to that one. It's really cool. All right, The Umbrellas, self-titled album. Let's start with number six. It's got a cool title. She Buys Herself Flowers.
Sometimes it gets so hard to feel like everyone's watching, everyone's talking, and nobody understands. Overthinking every second, disconnected, so rejected. Nobody knows your name. She buys herself flowers, walks the house for hours, searching for herself. And when she is sleeping, she's worried they're perceiving her as someone else.
The Umbrellas.
Yeah. That was my number one choice as well. And I can't help but picture like a sitcom with maybe six friends, three male, three female. And this could be a great theme song for this sitcom that needs to be written.
Yeah, you're right. It could be a a TV show theme, and then they could make millions.
Yeah. Yeah, and deservedly so. I think it's just so catchy.
Yeah, when I first listened to it, I knew I had a pretty good impression. You know, it's like you kind of sample it, like it's kind of the vibe. I think I'm gonna like it, and then I thought the first half just took a while for me to glom onto, and then the second half I liked a lot more. But then I listened to it a couple more times, and I kind of like it all. So solid.
I think I was sort of backwards. First half for me was really great, and then I think you mentioned, you know, in our extensive work throughout the weeks leading up to this podcast,
right,
that you were really liking the second half, and so I paid more attention to that, and yeah, the whole thing is really solid.
It's pretty consistent, really, isn't it? And so it's sort of jangle poppy, but also kind of 60s melodic, I guess I would say,
for sure.
So yeah. Well, I did steal your pick, so that means you got to go to the second tier now.
Yep. So I'm going trusty opening track, Lonely.
I feel so lonely, so do I. Can we hold each other? Can we stay the night till the morning comes? Then we'll say our goodbye. This is goodbye.
The Umbrellas. They were listening when we said we liked the male-female trade-off vocals, right?
Yes, I had to get that in there, make sure we heard that. I've heard sort of echoes of maybe some the poppier, more rockin' Magnetic Fields, which happens on rare occasion, I feel like. Mm-hmm. It's probably the male-female vocals.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it seems like a lot of the things that other people are referencing when they've talked about them have been like the C86 bands. Is that is that correct?
Barry and I talked about that
Sarah
one time.
Records, is that right? Sarah Records, is that the record label?
I think so.
Yeah, yeah. Like I missed the boat on that stuff, so I have some history to catch up on.
So the C86, I think Barry and I had a discussion about this on an earlier podcast. We were trying to like understand or define what this whole C86 means. You know, it's a reference to a cassette, like the length of a cassette, right? So if you got a C86, right, you get 43 minutes per side. But it's sort of an era, and it's interesting because it sort of seems to cover some of this sort of jangly psychedelic pop stuff, but also some sort of more Brit pop, almost moving in the direction of like Oasis, you know, but maybe not quite that far. So that's kind of the range, I think, that this whole C86 thing is supposed to fall into. So, but I think they put that on their Bandcamp, right? So they're like,
I think so. I think
they're buying into the C86 thing. All right, another track. This is kind of a slower one, and let's go with a deep cut, number 10, Summer.
Okay.
The Umbrellas from the self-titled album.
That's a really good one as well. I really like the sort of Be My Baby beat.
Yeah, it's like a slowed down Be My Baby drum beat. Yeah.
Yeah. Back to Slumberland Records, a few notable acts. Black Tambourine, did you ever listen to that band?
The name is familiar, but I don't know.
Really kind of cool bands that only put out, you know, very minimal amount of stuff. I think, I don't know when it was, maybe 70s, 80s. But it looks like Stereolab released a little bit with them. Pains of Being Pure at Heart, just to name a few.
Oh, I found a list here. There are a ton of bands that we've talked about on this label. Here, let's name some off here. Business of Dreams, Frankie Rose, mm-hmm. Neutrals, Paper Cuts. These are all bands we've talked about on the podcast. The Proper Ornaments, the Red, Pinks, and Purples, Young Gov. They have a lot of cool. They have a lot of them. No wonder I think I like this label. Crystal Stilts, Dum Dum Girls.
Yeah.
Art Museums, that's a Glenn Donaldson thing. Aloe Darlin. Remember Aloe Darlin?
I don't know that one.
We talked about them on the podcast in about like 2011, probably. Swirlies, they're an old shoegaze band. The Lodger, podcast friends, The Lodger. Velocity nice. Girl. All right, Slumberland Records is totally legit. So, cool. They're a little promo for the curators of good music, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, you would think that we're kind of coming to the end of the podcast now, right? And we're about to say goodnight, right? Because we're well above $0. But there's this new thing now. We have the bonus song of the week, right?
That's right.
And, you know, so the listeners have to keep listening. They don't have to. They can turn off right now if they think our picks are going to be bad. But have we covered the Umbrellas sufficiently so we can move on?
I think so. Go check them out, everybody. All right. Check out Slumberland.
Yep, definitely do it. So a fun thing about the bonus song of the week, we have our first listener suggested bonus song of the week. Our listener, Greg, who we hear from periodically, and it's always fun to hear from Greg. He sent in a suggestion of something that, you know, had some meaning to him. And let me find his email here so we can relate what he said. He said, "I was listening to a random playlist on my commute this week when Mudhoney's Touch Me, I'm Sick played. What a great song. I played this a lot in high school. I remember how refreshing it was at the time. And knowing the late 1980s hair bands were quickly becoming obsolete." So this was like, and I remember Mudhoney. I didn't listen to them a lot, but I remembered them. And so I went back and I verified they were a Seattle, they were part of that whole Seattle grunge scene.
Yeah.
And so here it is, Mudhoney and the song Touch Me, I'm Sick. Mudhoney, Touch Me, I'm Sick. That is Greg's bonus song of the week. And here's a funny thing. The title of the album, this is from 1988. The album is called Super Fuzz Big Muff, which is like, that's a pedal, right? It's,
yeah,
must
totally.
Be the pedal that they used, right?
Yeah, it must be all over that song. I don't think I've ever heard that. Like, I know I've heard Sonic Youth did a cover at some point, and it's pretty faithful to the original. It's really fun.
Yeah. Yep. And it that is, I agree with Greg. I mean, it's like refreshing change from Motley Crue and Cinderella.
I'm sure at the time it was. I had no idea this was going on at that time, but yeah, I could see it.
Thinking back. Yeah. All right, cool. Thanks, Greg. Jason, you've got a fun one.
Okay. Well, good. Yes. I spent the past week and a half looking for our lost cat, and we never found him.
Ugh.
So other than Flower Town and the Umbrellas, I was listening to like the sort of quintessential Yola Tango albums, like the mid-90s, Painful through I Can Hear the Heart Beating as one, just as sort of, you know, comfort, like a warm blanket, because I was definitely feeling a little bummed that we couldn't find our cat. So, and these are, you know, these are like old friends for me at this point, because I've listened to them so many times. And so I just picked out one that I've been listening to this album for over, 20 years, and I still have no idea what they're saying in this song. It doesn't I don't know. Doesn't make me like it any less. So I picked out Deeper Into Movies, and it's from I Can Hear the Heart Beating as One.
You know, that is just an example of why Yo La Tengo is so great. Because there's no way I could have told you the title of that song or what album it's from. I'm not even sure if I remember the song, but I had it, you know, it was in my music collection.
That's so wild, yeah.
They have so many albums and there's so much good music there. And it reminds me of when I saw them live and I've told the story about how my wife left after the first half because she was falling asleep because they did the slow set, then they did the then they did the rockin' set. So the whole rockin' set, I didn't know what they were playing. It's like, okay, yeah, I've listened to 10 Yo La Tengo albums. I don't know the song titles. I don't know. I just know it's good, right? And it's just good, right? You don't even know what they're playing, but it's good. So
And
that's yeah, man, you can just immerse yourself in that, right?
That song in particular, there was one time I saw them, I think in Dallas or something, and they play like that sort of opening when it's quiet. They somehow replicate that. I don't know if he's just, you know, he doesn't have all five of his distortion pedals on, but but you know, like they kick in when the song starts, on the album, it just doesn't stop, right? It just goes through the whole song, and it's just a wall of noise, and it's amazing. Yeah. But this particular time that I saw them play the song, they're playing half the song, and then everybody drops out, and he goes back to, like, they're starting the song again. It was just amazing, and it's always stuck with me as this moment. You know, I don't know if they've ever played the song live like this again, but it was so cool to have them drop out and kind of started over again and then punch back in, you know, and hit all the distortion pedals again. But that's why they're one of my favorite bands. They have so many songs to pick from. I'll try not to pick them every week that I come on.
They'll probably come back. I can definitely see them coming back here in the next year or two. They'll probably have a new album too.
I would think so.
I think the last album they put out, I had a little hard time getting into, but the one before that I really liked a lot. So it's the catalog is just awesome though. It's great.
Yeah.
So, great pick. And boy, I hope you find the cat. That's so sad.
Yeah, I mean, he's an older guy, you know, and he had the hyperthyroidism thing going, and mm-hmm. so
I just think it's been well over a week and it's been so hot out. The best thing I can hope for is somebody somehow found him and picked him up and they're feeding him and taking care of him or something.
Yeah, and sometimes they hide under the porch or something, and then they, after a while, you'll hear a meow and they'll come back. So, well, best of luck with him. That's really, that's too bad. Well, all right, I've got to pick. You know, there are too many things to pick, right? So you just kind of like, what I started I played my music catalog at random, and I said, something's going to just grab me. So then when Ivory Library came on, I'm like, well, I guess I got to play Ivory Library. So I've talked about Ivory Library before. They played at I somehow got them to play at our wedding reception, which was so cool. So they were like my favorite band in Madison in like 1982. Like REM and Ivory Library were my two favorite bands. And they're still Jeff, the primary singer, guitar player, is still playing music with a band called Square Wave. And if you search for Square Wave, you're going to get like a different band called Square Wave, and it gets all messed up. So if you really want to find their music, you have to go to their record label, which is called Artisanal Records. So go to Artisanal Records, look for Square Wave, and it's got a little bit of that early REM kind of thing, but it's got a little bit, it ventures more psychedelic rock kind of, and he'll do like really great slow piano type songs, and then he'll do like crazy psych jams and stuff. And so this is a song from an album they put out in now I'm not displaying the year, I think it's somewhere around like 1994, an album called Parasite and a song called BC. The other trivia here is that the bass player Derek, he worked at B-Side Records here in Madison. I used to always go in there and talk to him, and he's got some cool bass lines. So here it is. Ivory Library's song is called BC. There's my bonus track of the week.
That's a Madison band? That's wild. That does not sound like a U.S. band.
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah,
and
well,
the bass lines were insane, especially in the opening.
Yeah.
They were,
yeah.
It seems like a real workout for your fingers.
Right. I mean, Derek was like all over the bass. And he, like in the mid-90s, he moved to San Francisco. I guess not for indie rock stardom. He's had a band out there. A little bit, But anyway, yeah, I love it. I call them Madison Legends, Ivory Library, and just love that they're still making music as Square Wave. And that was the show I was supposed to go to a couple weeks ago, and I didn't go because it was just too much Delta variant. I just decided I just wasn't going to do it. So we'll wait until we're a little bit more in the clear and get a chance to see him again, I'm sure.
Yeah.
So, well, we were...
Sounds like a good plan.
We were above $0 so long ago. Like, I can't even remember how long ago that was, right? It seems like hours ago.
Yeah.
Yep. Well, it's a good one. So, thanks for your contributions.
And thanks for having me.
It's fun as usual. Well, I've got a possible... trying to conceptualize the next week. You know, we go week to week and we're like, we got to have some content here. So, yeah, there's some possibilities. So, well, I think that's all I've got. You got anything else?
No, other than, thanks to Flower Town for coming, being the special stars of the show.
Yeah, that was great. Good luck to them. The album is really good. And, you know, we played some pretty good samples. I think people know whether that's the kind of thing that they're into. But, oh, man, I love that scene exists. It's just so great.
I know.
Right?
It's been really fun to follow the last couple of years.
Yeah. All right. I guess we'll say goodnight. And everybody, thanks for listening. We'll talk to everybody again next week with another edition of Will's Band of the Week. Good night.
Good night.
The Will's Band of the Week podcast is brought to you each week from Fourth Bedroom Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, with correspondents from the United States, Canada, England, and Australia. You can subscribe to the podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found. All of our episodes can be found at willsband.net. To contact us, send email to willsband@yahoo.com or find us on Twitter, Facebook, or Instagram. Our theme music was composed by Grant and performed by Grant and Will. Thanks for listening.